along the road. Like God's eyes in my headlights. When the dogs are looking for their bones, and it's raining ice picks on your steel shore. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my. Gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break. I'm gonna break my.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Traces of Reality Radio on tracesofreality.com, live on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I am your host, Guillermo Jimenez. Thank you all so much for joining me this morning. Today is Wednesday, September 11th, 2013. I don't think anyone out there listening to this needs to be reminded of the significance of this day in history. The events of September 11th, 2001 are forever etched into our collective memory. A flashpoint event with obviously enduring political effects, but of course also sociological and psychological effects as well. And we'll be discussing 9/11 this morning, 9/11 truth, the movement, where it's been, where it is today, and where we see it going forward. And more to the point, where we believe it needs to be moving forward. And to do just that, I'll be joined by my special guest this morning, Mr. James Corbett of the Corbett Report, in just a couple minutes. Before we get rolling here with the show, just a quick reminder that you can interact with us here live on Traces of Reality through our social media pages on Facebook and Twitter. That's /Traces of Reality on both of those sites. Questions and comments, put them up on the TOR Facebook page or tweet me at Traces of Reality. And of course, time permitting, you can join us in our conversation by calling 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. All right, now on today's show, as I mentioned, my guest this morning is the host of the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com. James has done his share of research into 9/11 over the years, and his YouTube video, 9/11, A Conspiracy Theory, now approaching 2 million views, is still, in my opinion, the best deconstruction of the official narrative of 9/11 out there, and all under 5 minutes, no less. James, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Guillermo. It is a pleasure to join you as always, and especially on a momentous day like this that really is an important day for breaking through the conditioning and the propaganda that we've been force-fed for the last 12 years and hopefully shake a few more people out of this matrix.
Absolutely, completely agree, and it's always great to talk to you. And I know you've had quite a busy day so far, so I appreciate you joining me now past midnight in Japan. But you know, I wanted to begin our conversation this morning by taking a look back at the last 12 years at both the victories and the failures, unfortunately, of the truth movement. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, where it's been, where it is, where it's headed. And the last part, of course, is what I'd like to emphasize. But looking back, you know, this is something we've discussed in the past, James, the dual psychological effects of 9/11 or events of this scale in general, but there haven't been that many. But, you know, on the one hand, inducing the degree of fear to revert the mind into this childlike regression, turning to that paternalistic authority figure in government for answers, and then accepting just about anything and everything they ask for without question. But on the other hand, for a smaller but growing segment of society, it had a much different effect. And out of this horror, truths were revealed, and at this point, you know, use your metaphor of choice, you know, red pill moment, your wake up moment, whatever you'd like. But I'd like to get your thoughts on this, James. You know, what has come out of this, looking back now on this 12-year anniversary?
Well, it is an interesting dichotomy, isn't it? Because certainly people like myself have really woken up to the entire matrix, the control grid itself, because of 9/11 and my coming to grips with what really happened on that day. So it has had that effect. But as you say, it put so many people into that state of really fear-based mind control that they've been sleepwalking through for the last 12 years that it really does seem like the population itself is being cleaved into two classes, the ones that will be able to resist the conditioning and the ones that will not only take it on board, but will defend it to their last breath, because it's their kind of the reality that they've constructed around them that they have to believe in. It is an interesting dichotomy, and it's interesting for me as I'm going through and creating all these videos related to 9/11, obviously in the run-up and in the aftermath of the anniversary. I'm going back and looking at some of the footage from that day and some of the news footage that was being broadcast that day, listening to some of the interviews where even some of the anchors are saying in the coverage, you know, I'm feeling afraid of this. Should I be afraid? And asking their terrorist guest experts who were conveniently lined up to put the official narrative forward right there on the day. So it's interesting going back and watching it from that perspective. And I don't think necessarily every anchor was involved in the plot or anything like that, but it was just the natural way that people approach this is, I'm afraid, what can the government do about it? And of course, that's exactly what false flag terrorism is about. That's exactly the feeling that it's designed to elicit. And it's usually not so spectacular as this, as you point out, but it is important for people to know that it's been used time and time and time and time and time again throughout history, throughout the centuries, to lead people into wars that they didn't want anything to do with otherwise. And in fact, in that regard, I'm putting together a video which I'm going to be releasing sometime tonight at 2 or 3 or 7 in the morning or whenever it is, about the history of false flag terrorism, so people can look forward to that.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that myself. You know, and you're absolutely right. This is a template that has worked over and over and over again throughout history, which is why it continues to be used. It's been very effective. It continues to be effective. And as we've been talking about, you know, this week, last week, the week before on the radio here with regard to Syria, thankfully, it seems as though, anyway, in this case, there's a growing number of people who are not buying the corporate stream propaganda that's being fed to them anymore. And that's encouraging. So maybe, just maybe, out of this truth movement, maybe the biggest victory that we've had is just that. Is that the next time that this is attempted, it won't work anymore. That psychological effect that has worked over and over again throughout history will not have that same effect. And after all, I mean, what more can we hope for? I know you've talked about this just recently, James. You did a podcast on this very subject on bringing justice to the individuals who were truly responsible for this and the likelihood of that. And unfortunately, regrettably, as you said in your podcast, I mean, in some alternate universe, perhaps that might be possible. It's just being a realist, it doesn't seem like that's ever going to happen. But, you know, having said that, again, at least we can take this victory, the idea that maybe, just maybe, we can prevent this from happening again. That, I think, in itself is a victory to be celebrated. And I think you would agree with that, James.
I do agree 110% with that. And that's something that I've really marveled at in the last year or two, is to see the extent to which these ideas really are breaking through to the mainstream. And I definitely saw that in the wake of the Boston Marathon bombing, where false flag became a trending topic on Google, and some of my old 3 or 4 year old videos about false flag terrorism suddenly were going viral again. It was really bizarre to see that happening, but very heartening in a way, because it shows that people, instead of being just receptive, passive containers for whatever propaganda is fed into them in the moments after a crisis, are now actively questioning the legitimacy and the authority of these people in these so-called positions of authority and power. And that is definitely to the good. I'm not sure that the alternative media can necessarily claim all of the credit for that. I think to a certain extent, the authorities have discredited themselves through the Iraq war and all of the ridiculous debacles we've lived through over the past decade. But whatever the reason, at the very least, this delegitimization is happening. And I think people really are less likely to simply sleepwalk through whatever propaganda they put out in the wake of whatever spectacular event occurs. And the only thing that I think would counteract that at this stage is something even more spectacular and even more traumatic than a 9/11. And I shudder to think what that would be or how they would attempt to use that. But I think barring something like that, these things like what we saw in Syria aren't flying anymore. And that is to the good.
Exactly. We'll talk a lot more about this, folks. We've just barely have scratched the surface. Stay with us here on Traces of Reality Radio. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us. Traces of Reality Radio, your host here, Guillermo Jimenez, spending the hour with Mr. James Corbett of the Corbett Report. We're talking about 9/11 on this 12-year anniversary, 9/11 Truth. And before the break, James, we were discussing the psychological effects of September 11, 2001, and the fact that it's beginning to wear off. And you made the point that it may just be, since it is beginning to wear off, since the public isn't buying this sort of stuff anymore, and that the fear that it induced is wearing off, that, you know, you're very right to point out that they may just attempt to do something even more spectacular on an even larger scale to win that back. So that's something to definitely keep our eye on, and that's why these sorts of conversations and the sort of information that you put out in your videos, James, is so very important. And on the other hand, though, on the other side of that coin, of we talked earlier about the dual nature of that psychological effect, right? And the other side of that coin is also true. The other part of that psychological effect I've seen is also beginning to wear off, meaning we don't see much 9/11 Truth these days, 12 years later, and it hasn't been all that long. And so I'm wondering what you think, James, as far as this aspect of things. I know you mentioned in that same podcast I referenced earlier, comparing this to the JFK assassination investigation and the way that went eventually. But, you know, in 2013, with the speed of information these days, I'm wondering if 9/11 Truth perhaps peaked too soon, if it reached its plateau. How do you read this, James? I mean, maybe you're not as pessimistic as I am about this.
Well, I see it from multiple different perspectives. I certainly see what you're saying, and the idea of peaking too soon might indeed be true, because certainly we haven't reached anything approaching justice for 9/11, let alone even the beginnings of any sort of political change that we would expect to see if 9/11 Truth was having any kind of profound effect on the political apparatus of the United States. But I think to a certain extent we can place some of the flowering of awareness that's going on and the skepticism that's happening right now with regards to things like the Syrian chemical weapons attack and other things as part of the seeds that were planted by the 9/11 Truth Movement. And I think it's the work of people in the 9/11 Truth Movement talking about false flag terrorism and bringing that into the mainstream conversation that has really allowed us to get at least this far. So I think that there definitely have been things that 9/11 Truth has accomplished. But I think it's just a sort of mundane fact that as 9/11 stops becoming the reason and the motivation and the excuse for everything, so too does it sort of lose its political relevance in a way. Not that it's not relevant anymore, but certainly not as relevant as it was right there in the thick of the Bush administration while the Iraq War was still waging and the like. Now it's sort of one degree removed, and as a result, the 9/11 Truth Movement is also one degree removed from the core of the political conversation. There was a time in which 9/11 Truth was the core issue that could have brought down the Bush administration and the war on terror and all of the phoniness that's swirling around in the government these days. It doesn't quite have that primal urgency anymore. And since we are now 12 years away, one administration removed, and it doesn't seem to be as politically pressing an issue, I think it's lost that ability to be the central issue in a lot of ways. Although I still do think that there's a lot of room for 9/11 Truth to grow and mature as a movement into something more than hopefully a JFK investigation, which even as it stands, even 50 years later, I don't think we can say that the JFK assassination investigation has been a complete failure. It has accomplished a number of things, including the fact that it was the Assassination Records Review Board that was set up in the wake of the JFK Oliver Stone film that actually uncovered the documents that exposed Operation Northwoods. So there have been some tangential sort of accomplishments that the JFK investigation has wrought out of the U.S. government that people may not even recognize as such. But the Operation Northwoods, of course, went on to become a core fact that 9/11 Truth looked to when it was talking about what happened on 9/11. So it can be surprising the way information comes out. And it's important to remember that the public hadn't even seen the Zapruder film for, what was it, however many, 15 years or whatever after the assassination, before the public ever saw that film. So who knows what pieces of evidence might still be around the corner for 9/11 truth. I wouldn't write it out of the equation yet. It's just a question of whether or not it's sort of peaked in terms of its political relevance. But I still think it has that part to play in awakening people to the nature of the system in general.
Yeah, I think so too. It definitely does have its part to play. And I think it still is that core that you mentioned that connects, as I mentioned earlier, this is was the birth of the modern national security state. And that's not to be forgotten or overstated. And I know, again, as you mentioned, 12 years later, it's sort of lost its political muster. We're in, administration removed now. It's not used politically the way it was during the Bush years. So naturally, it's not as talked about in the alternative media also, offering a different perspective and giving real answers. But yeah, I think it's something that should definitely continue to be investigated. And to your credit, James, that's something that you've done. You've not forgotten about this regrettably, I have not done the level of research into this in the past few months or even the last year as I feel I should have done, because there's a scandal every minute, it seems, right? And that's all cynically, we could view that as all part and parcel, part of the ultimate design is crisis du jour, and you keep the public so busy with the new scandals and new tragedies that we lose sight of maybe what we should be focusing on, which is what kickstarted it all, what the core of this is. Obviously the seeds were sown a long time ago. The framework was set decades before 9/11, obviously. But that was that, cataclysmic, catalyzing event that really jump-started the modern national security state. So I think that's very, very important to point out and to keep our eye on. And just as an example, I won't mention any names, but I read this earlier on Twitter from someone who's considered a civil libertarian, cares about civil liberties and the national security state. But she wrote this, and I'm going to read this. And again, I'm not going to mention any names. That's not important. But this is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. She writes, "May our memory of 9/11 not be wrapped in politics, militarism, or nationalism. May we be able to simply reflect upon and respect life and loss. For many, it was and will always remain a horror, and that is enough to respect 12 years later and forever." Now, while I certainly appreciate and understand the sentiment, I think it loses sight of the horror that happened as a result of 9/11 by this government as a reaction to it, and that, to me, was the greater tragedy. We got to go to a break. We'll talk more with Mr. James Corbett of the Corbett Report. Stay with us here on Traces of Reality Radio. Right, we are back again. Welcome back. Thank you for sticking with us here on Traces of Reality Radio. Your host here, Guillermo Jimenez, with Mr. James Corbett for the remainder of the hour, talking about 9/11. Again, the 12-year anniversary is today, of course, and we're discussing 9/11 truth. Before the last break, we were comparing the 9/11 truth movement to the JFK investigation, and both positively and negatively. A lot of positives there, of course, as you pointed out, James. One of the sort of ways that it compares negatively, I think, is it shares a lot of the same pitfalls that the JFK investigation did. And I know that you pointed this out as well. The focus on the hows and trying to figure out exactly how it happened, and then sort of quibbling over details for decades or endlessly. And this is true of 9/11 truth, of course. There's been a lot of that. And there's been, and I don't want to focus on this too much. I really don't. I just want to simply point it out and accept as fact that it's happened. The infighting, the finger pointing, the accusations, the questioning of motivations. Well, that's not how I think it happened. So you must be a COINTELPRO plant or something. You know what I mean? That happens, and that's just the truth of it. But having said that, I think that what's important, as you've been pointing out also, James, is to focus on more of the who's and the whys that this happened. And I think that's how we come at the truth after all. So I do want to focus a little bit on that. I don't know if you want to address those points quickly here, and we can get into the important details that you've been talking about lately as far as naming names and following up on these leads to eventually come at the truth.
Well, let me just say, I think you're unfortunately exactly right about the way that, unfortunately, the movement has really been brought in that regard to a lot of the finger pointing and accusations and the claims of COINTELPRO and the like for anyone who disagrees with anyone else and arguing and squabbling and factionalization. And I've been watching this happening with increasing frustration over the last few years as 9/11 itself, as we talked about before the break there, as it starts to become sort of politically less relevant and more taken off the table, it seems that the 9/11 truth movement is even becoming even less relevant by getting into these endless squabbles between each other and arguing about things that the average public just doesn't even is not even on their radar. And so anyone who was coming into that and looking at that as a movement would just be instantly, I think, rejected out of there and say, no, thank you. So I think, some of this, I think, is absolutely, intentional. I mean, if we look at the ways that the JFK assassination investigation was stifled, infiltrated, and otherwise messed with in various ways from its very inception, and think that now 50 years further on, and with all of the attendant growth in the intelligence agencies over that time, and their attendant growth in power and money and organization and technique, one could imagine that they would be even more sophisticated in the ways that they've attempted to undermine the 9/11 truth movement. And I think we'd have to be naive to neglect that fact. But when you take a look at things like even of course the recent and widely cited article by the Obama Information Czar Cass Sunstein about cognitive infiltration and how we have to send people into the various conspiracy theory movements to undermine what they're talking about, even just that paper itself in a way has started a lot of the finger pointing and the accusations, right, and has started the very thing it was talking about, because suddenly now everyone's pointing and saying cognitive infiltration, it's you. And if that was the intent, hey, it worked beautifully. And that's to our detriment. So I think you're right also that the way forward has to be in the identification of the individuals around whom we can construct some sort of case that, hey, maybe we could actually take into a courtroom given the right circumstances. And there are actually avenues through which we can accomplish that. And perhaps we can talk about that later as well. But even if that doesn't happen, I think still that would be the bedrock fundamental information through which we can actually take 9/11 truth to the next level in spreading the awareness and winning the battle in the court of public opinion, which is the other battle that I think needs to be won. I think really 9/11 truth has to have two main spearheads as its thrust, as its goal. And the first, obviously, is to achieve justice and to put the perpetrators in shackles and in orange jumpsuits and to see justice for what happened that day. But also, I think we have to be thinking about the winning of the hearts and minds of the people and getting people to understand really what happened insofar as that does inoculate us from future attacks. So it has to be a two-headed assault, I think. And unfortunately, we've been failing on both counts because, as you say, there's been a lot of fighting over the hows and not nearly enough on the whos and whys and whats.
Yep, exactly. No, completely agree. And that's a really good point you just made about the Cass Sunstein paper. That's, I mean, just the idea that it's happening. And you're right. I like you, James, I do think that I do honestly think that there are legitimate infiltrators and people who intentionally put out this information. I mean, that absolutely happens. I mean, that's not really a conspiracy theory. That's documented in COINTELPRO itself. That's always a real program. And by the way, I get annoyed a little bit. I've mentioned this already. I've made this point before, but I'll go ahead and make it again. I get annoyed a little bit but when people call out those in the media and say, oh, he's COINTELPRO. And maybe they're referring to Mockingbird. Maybe because, I mean, COINTELPRO wasn't exactly that. There's a different history behind it, but it sort of gets tossed around. And even if they're using it appropriately, it gets tossed around to the point where it's losing its meaning. I mean, it devalues what the destruction that program actually caused to real people that were either discredited or flat out murdered by the government as a result of that program. Now that's a real thing, and I think by misusing it the way it's been misused, it really devalues it, the whole idea behind it, and the research behind coming at the truth with that program. So just wanted to get that point out there briefly. Also, to your point, yeah, of course, you know, I completely agree that the house is something that perhaps should be looked at, sure, but it should not be the central focus, because I think that's distracting. So getting into that, before we run out of time here, we have just a few minutes before the next break, and then about 10 minutes on the way back. But maybe we can touch on a few of those who's and a few of those what's, James. I mean, what in your view? I know this is probably a difficult question to sort of answer when asking it broad like this, but I mean, if you could just point out, I mean, from your perspective through your research. If people out there who may not have the sort of time that you and I may have to do and do the research necessary and really dig into this and spend hours upon hours looking this information up, what do you think is something that they can look into? Maybe one or two quick points that you think, you know, this is really fundamental to understanding what actually happened.
I always hate this question because it's a good question, and it is really important that we be able to boil this down, but maybe I'm too much immersed in all of this research to be able to do that effectively, because I have a million points that I'd like to point people to. But I guess one of the things that I've concentrated on increasingly so over the last few years has been the money trail, because as with any criminal investigation, obviously the money trail is a fundamental part of what any criminal investigator would or should be looking at in any crime. And let's keep in mind, 9/11 was a crime. I mean, we can slap labels of terrorism and the like on it, but that's really just a description of its effect. But the actual thing itself was a crime that was committed by criminals in a conspiracy, and no one actually disputes that fact. So let's follow the money trail from the crime. And in that regard, we have lots of different things that people could be looking at, not only the insider trading, which I think everyone has, or many people have heard about, the put options on a lot of the stocks in the lead up to 9/11. But there's a lot of other aspects to the money trail that are equally fascinating. And one that I really think is absolutely incredibly fascinating and has gotten very little play even in the 9/11 truth movement is the information surrounding Marsh & McLennan, which was a risk management / insurance brokerage firm that had several floors in the World Trade Center that just happened to be the very floors that where the impact happened. And it was involved in all sorts of shady transactions with AIG that were facilitated by software that was being provided by a company called Silverstream Technologies that the whistleblower Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyandHope.com, that I'm sure many of your listeners might be familiar with, has talked about in the past with regards to his part in selling that software and then discovering that there were problems in that software that were not being told about to the clients. And then trying to figure out basically why there were anomalous transactions taking place and he wasn't being billed for, he wasn't getting his commission for this. And in the course of investigating that, he ends up getting called to a meeting on the whichever floor, the 88th floor or whatever it was of the World Trade Center that morning that happens to be the exact place where the plane ends up hitting. He's a little late for the meeting and ends up surviving. And all of the other people who were concerned about what was happening with regards to that technology end up getting killed. And in the aftermath in the recovery in Ground Zero, they recover 400 hard drives from various of the businesses, including a lot of the financial institutions that are tenants there. And some of those hard drives have incredible information that show that as much as $100 million in anomalous transactions took place in the minutes during the attack and immediately after the plane impact. And all of this money was being moved around in the system and then taken out somewhere and no one could figure out what was happening. There was even a Deutsche Bank whistleblower who talked about this to Michael Rupert back several years ago, that no one knew exactly what was happening. It was like some outside force had taken control of their computer systems. And so there was a company that was hired to try to recover the data from these hard drives. It's a German company called Convar. They examined 39 of the hard drives and found all of this anomalous transaction information. And then the trail basically goes cold, and I've never seen a satisfactory explanation as to what happened with the other hard drives or what information was recovered, but that's a fascinating story that hasn't gotten nearly enough play.
Oh, yeah, incredible information. We got to go take a break here, and we'll be right back with our final segment of Traces of Reality. Stay with us here, folks. All right, welcome back. Final segment here on Traces of Reality Radio, talking to James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. And before the break, James, you were elaborating on Marshall McLennan, Paul Bremer, who's a really interesting character, if I can put it that way. And you made the point, and I think it's an excellent one, that I think deserves some more attention here, that there hasn't been, and that's something that I think people forget, that there hasn't been a real criminal and a true criminal investigation of 9/11, and you made the point. You know, how do you solve a crime? And what you do is you look at the physical evidence, which, you know, there isn't any anymore, so we can't do that with respect to 9/11. You follow the money, which is what you were describing, and you look for motive and the ability to carry this out. And the idea that it was some, you know, sickly, basically dying man in a cave masterminding the operation with a cell phone and a laptop. I mean, that may be true in a comic book, I guess, but not in the real world, which I guess plays to the point we made earlier about the psychological effect of 9/11 and the fact that everyone sort of regressed to this childlike state where they'll believe just about anything. They'll believe that a comic book narrative could actually take place in the real world. So on this point, James, could you, you finish your thought, because you were interrupted by that commercial break, and then we can talk, again, more about Paul Bremer, and the idea of looking for motive and ability, and how laughable it is that it was carried out by these 19 hijackers with box cutters masterminded by a dying man in a cave.
Well, with regards to Paul Bremer and his connection to Marshall McLennan, at the time of 9/11, he was actually the head of risk management or political risk for Marshall McLennan. So his offices were, in fact, in the World Trade Center. And on any normal day, he would have been there at the site and probably, if not dying, with 200 plus other Marshall McLennan employees who did die that day, at least being one of the people who was involved in all of that. But as it turns out, he was on a flight back to New York that got diverted to Baltimore after the carnage of the day started happening, and he ended up on national TV talking to NBC about his experience as the former commissioner of a national blue ribbon panel on terrorism and the fact that that we're likely to see some spectacular terrorist attack that's going to bring the issue of international terrorism to the forefront. So his connections to that are interesting. I think there's a lot of different people who are involved in different aspects and capacities who would be interesting suspects in this crime for different reasons, and he's one of the ones that you would look at as someone who helped to set up the narrative that was then ready to be presented literally on air, literally in the hours after the attack. And you can go and watch the footage of him as he's just watched a few hundred of his fellow colleagues at Marshall McLennan die the most horrific death possible, and he's there on TV basically saying, "Yep, it was Osama bin Laden. We're going to have to start a war. Probably going to have to go after Iraq or Iran, and basically the entire official narrative and the neocon war plans were all there ready to roll out on national TV that morning. So some pretty interesting connections there. And we could go on and talk about some of the other people who we would put in that suspect category. But I would just refer people to my recent podcast for that, where I talk to, for example, Kevin Ryan, who's just put out a really important book called Another 19, in which he proposes another 19 suspects rather than the men armed with box cutters who were told actually did this. But before we wrap things up today, I really want to make the point that as much as it does seem like an alternate universe where we could actually prosecute these suspects, I think we shouldn't give up on the hope altogether. And there are avenues that people can actually take in that regard. One of which is related to my presentation, which I made in Malaysia last year at the 9/11 Revisited conference, where I was one of the speakers that was presenting that day in front of the Perdana Global Peace Foundation, which is related to the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to Criminalize War. This is at criminalizewar.org, and that's criminalize with an S, which I believe is the British spelling. Mm-hmm. But criminalizewar.org, if people go there and use the contact form to contact the commission, the Tribunal Inquiry Commission at criminalizewar.org, because the Kuala Lumpur Foundation to Criminalize War is the commission that started the tribunal which actually convicted Bush, Cheney, and several other of the high-ranking neocon officials of the Bush administration of their war crimes related to the torture that went on during the Bush regime years. And they are the ones who would potentially start a commission that they would then refer to the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal for prosecution on 9/11. And as far as I know, this is in sort of a limbo at the moment. They've been talking about this idea, but they haven't decided, I think, one way or another, whether to proceed or how to proceed. If they heard from enough people, perhaps that could actually sway them into doing something like this. And it is important to know that there are things like this that can actually convict these people in a court of law that is presided over by real judges. It's a real verdict that really did come down. And even though there aren't exactly people with the police authority to go in and arrest Bush and Cheney and these other criminals, at the very least, they literally have to be careful where they go in the world so that they are not arrested. I mean, we saw Bush actually cancel a visit to Switzerland a few years ago because there was a credible threat he would have been arrested if he had set foot on Swiss soil. So we have to at least try to pursue these avenues as well as winning the battle in the court of public opinion.
Absolutely. No, I completely agree, and that's something that I've been saying a lot recently, and I said this yesterday on the air. Well, it might have been the day before yesterday, but I do hope that the audience out there, through any of our discussions about 9/11 or anything else, I don't want to ever give the impression that even though the situation is dire and it's serious and it's difficult, it's never hopeless, and you are never helpless. And I absolutely want to make sure that point is emphasized, and that's an excellent one, James. That there are avenues that we can take, and I know that there's going to be cynics out there that say, well, what good does that do? I mean, as you mentioned, James, yourself, there's no police authority to go and arrest these people. But I mean, again, Bush canceled his trip because he would have been arrested if he had set foot in Switzerland and many other places in the world, I'm sure. And this can be a very realistic way to sort of bring some amount, some degree of justice with regard to 9/11. So absolutely, I want to emphasize that again, that, you know, as large as these issues are and as complicated as they may be, there are real solutions that we can achieve and real victories to be gained, and just again, never give up that sort of that feeling, that those emotions that we had, you know, when we first started learning about these issues, learning about these facts, and just think back to those first few moments, you know, that again, I referenced this earlier, that wake up moment, that red pill moment where you know, that feeling that you had when you felt like you were seeing the world with a brand new set of eyes, and being energized and motivated to not only learn more, but to actually do something in any way, in big ways or small ways, but to do something about it. Think back to that, and sort of, I hope that by revisiting this today on this anniversary, that at least that spirit can somehow be reignited, and we can continue this dialogue and continue these investigations. And again, and again, celebrate our victories, even small ones. So, Thank you again, James, for joining me. We're almost out of time, but anything else you'd like to mention? Any parting remarks? Of course, as I mentioned earlier, y'all out there know, but CorbettReport.com is where you can find James and his regular podcasts and interviews. But anything else you'd like to say, James, before we close this out?
Well, we are moving into some very important and potentially world historical times as we stand on the brink of perhaps another intervention into the Middle East and perhaps the beginnings of the real divide that is going to perhaps shape the 21st century, where we look at Russia and China and their increasing encirclement by the NATO powers. And we see this seemingly inevitable march towards world war. And it is something that we do have to undermine in any and every way possible. So the victories that we have achieved in at least delaying, if not derailing, the Syrian intervention are significant. We have to appreciate that and really, I mean, press that even further, because again, these are some extremely important times. And I think 9/11 Truth is an excellent way to undermine the so-called legitimacy of these authorities that want to lead us into war after war. So let's continue to press this issue. And thank you for having me on to talk about it.
Absolutely. Again, big thanks to you for joining me. Big thanks to the audience for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow, every weekday, 10 to 11 a.m. Central, right here on RBN. Until next time, this has been Traces of Reality Radio. I am your host, Guillermo Jimenez, reminding you, as always, on this grand chessboard, it is we, the people, who are now in check. It's our move. Thank you all for listening.
I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage and run. I'm gonna break my rusty cage.